Welcome to the pod.
Welcome to the pod.
Welcome to the pod. The podcast where we talk about podcasts. No, wait,
no,
what?
No, it's called it's called Natural Disasters, and I'm Marissa.
And I'm Adam.
And
I kind of want to clarify the Natural Disasters title, because I feel like there's some people that are confused, and they will comment about the podcast and be like, you know, it's great, you guys are okay, but you're kind of disasters. And I want to be like, yeah, we put it in the title.
Well,
like,
I mean, we've addressed that multiple times at this point, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we've said this multiple times. I mean.
I'm a natural disaster.
We both are. It's fine.
Anyway. Welcome back.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Thank you. Yeah, I just got back from another trip.
Yeah, I think I said welcome home on the last pod too.
Yeah. So I've only been home like 4 days in the last like 3 weeks. It's been crazy. I was up in Portland. Doing some stuff for Feast, which is probably my favorite food festival that I go to every year. It's sponsored by Bon Appetit, but I've been going since before I worked for Bon Appetit. And man,
is it spread out throughout Portland?
Yes, it's all spread out throughout Portland. Okay. And it was a great time. Thank you to everyone that came out to me and Helen Johannesson's panel on the new old Italy. That was such a blast. And also thank you to everyone that came out to my party at Bar Norman with Dana Frank. And thank you all so much for how much support and love you showed me for the podcast.
Amazing.
I was like, I can't even keep up with how many of you love the podcast and how sweet you were to like relay it to Adam. But I have an idea about how you can relay your love of the pod.
Because I want love too. I love Portland and I want some Portland love.
We want all the love from all the places.
That's true.
I'm like, don't just put this on Portland. But honestly, thank you guys so much for all the compliments. It's really great. Again, though, what's really helpful is if you take those compliments and put them in our reviews on Apple or Stitcher, whatever you're using to listen to our podcast, which I think those are the only two that leave ratings. But if you could take all that love and put it there.
And just type a couple words.
Yeah, it can just be like, we love you. That's great. Or I love you. I don't know if there's multiple of you. Yeah, because that way Adam and I both get to see it, and it really helps us on our podcast and stuff.
It's really like, I was going to say, like, A, it helps because it helps. The reviews, I think, help with just like your visibility, your podcast. But for me, it's just a good morale booster.
Absolutely. I mean, you should see the emails I get. I showed Adam like the email I got today. So I definitely need some positive reviews.
We just like it.
We just like it.
And it helps.
We're humans.
And we want to keep doing this. You know, this is 19 pods.
I know. Wow.
And we like doing it. We enjoy doing it.
And the fact that
I'm not like, this isn't like a threat. Like, if you don't do it, we're going to stop. I'm just saying that like, it helps, you know, it helps to know that people are listening. It helps to know that people are liking it.
Yeah.
It just, you know.
It makes us feel good. We're humans.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't seem like it. I know you just think that we're a couple natural disasters and like nothing affects us. But no, it's just, it's great. And so thank you guys, everyone who showed me so much love. In Portland. Anyways, today though.
Oh man, what we're drinking. Let's start with that.
Yeah, let's start with what we're drinking, which ties into our topic for today, which is Petillant Naturel.
Yeah, or affectionately known as Pet Nats.
The cutest pet name ever.
Pet Nats.
It's a literal pet name.
So we're drinking Scar of the Sea that's made by, I always say his last name right. He's such a good friend. And like Mikey Gioni.
I'm just always like, Mikey.
Yeah, Mikey G. Mikey of Scar of the Sea. They also do ciders. He's a very talented winemaker.
I love him because he's from Rancho Cucamonga.
He is from Rancho Cucamonga.
And I'm from Upland. So like we were like neighbors and we had no idea.
But a lot of people have actually, like, you'll hear a lot of people. Mikey is a very well-rounded and talented winemaker, but his sparklings, I feel like, is what everyone is always like, yeah, Mikey just
dude, his sparklings
kills
fucking,
it with sparkling wine.
The first time I had one of his previous Petillant Naturels, I knocked my fucking socks off.
Yeah, like, so this is his 2018 Chardonnay. So we're drinking a wine that I think is like a month and a half, 2 months old.
Adam just disgorged it in my backyard.
Yeah, and it is drinking. I mean, it's drinking like a little bit of a young wine, but man, it's good. It's 100% Chardonnay.
And it's 00.
00. So he's
no sulfur.
From an organic vineyard, no additions whatsoever, and just really beautiful, clean, sexy wine. I can't wait to see what this is going to be like. I mean, it's great now, but like when it sort of matures a little
bit. Yeah, no, it's really great. So it's a beautiful very cloudy sunshine. Like if like the sun was also a cloud, if that makes sense. It's like very, very bright
yellow.
It's
like when the sun peaks through a cloud and you get like that really beautiful.
Yeah, it's like just a really, really pretty like hazy, cloudy, like but pure yellow.
Yeah.
And then on the nose, oh my God, the nose is just like pops you with pink peppercorn, like right off the bat. I don't think I would guess that this was Chardonnay.
No,
off
not
of
at a, all.
Off of, if I was just smelling it blindly. Yeah.
And it's really,
it's like it's pink peppercorn and like coral colored tea roses. They have a specific smell.
It's got a very floral
it's
quality.
It's super floral,
to it.
And it tastes awesome. It's just tasting great so
yeah,
far. I mean,
spectacular.
For the fact that this is only a month or two old, it's really, really exciting. So
good
yeah,
job, Mikey.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited to see what's going on there.
Yeah. So Pet Nats.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Pet Nats, which is a type of sparkling wine, a natural sparkling wine. But before we get to that, it's pretty important for us to, you know, lay out the other methods of sparkling wine because, you know, there isn't just Petillant Naturel in the world. There's also lots of other things. So before we go into the deep dive of Petillant Naturel and the discussion on that, let's talk a little bit about some of the other methods
yeah.
first.
So let's start with the one that sort of is the default one that everyone sort of thinks of when they think of sparkling wine, which is champagne. Which
I know that that's what everyone thinks about because on planes, they'll be like, oh, we have champagne. And I'm like, you mean sparkling California wine. I
made
can see
in
the bottle.
Tank.
And they're like, no, it's champagne. I'm like, bitch, I can see the bottle.
It's cooks.
Yeah, or like, it's Prosecco. Like, don't come at me. I'm in first class, which
I mean,
doesn't
it was,
happen that often, but that's why I'm like, don't fucking lie to me.
Remember Wayne's World?
Yeah.
So champagne, or what has been called the method champenois, or the champagne method, which I don't think you can use anymore because now that has been taken. So people call it the traditional method or method traditional.
Yep.
There's probably other names for it that I'm not thinking of right now.
But it's also not used just for champagne. It's also used for cava in Spain, as well as French Accorta in Italy.
Yeah, and lots of people in California use that method as well, which
totally.
Is... The easiest way to put it is it's a dual, or it's a wine that's been fermented or has gone through two fermentation processes.
So first they make the base
they
wine.
They make still wine. They
just
make
wine.
They make wine using a barrel, using stainless steel, using amphora. You can use whatever you want. You're just making still wine.
And usually, you know, I mean, in champagne, you know, it's a it can be a blend of a ton of different
oh,
grapes.
Yeah. They're
most of these, you know, like champagne, cava, though, even I think French Accorta, they're blends of lots of different grapes, you know?
Very, yeah. I mean, in champagne, you know, sorry, they do single mono varietal that they call like Blanc de Blanc, which doesn't necessarily have to be just Chardonnay, but
yeah,
typically
because it can
is.
Be, yeah, because I mean, they also use Pinot Noir.
Not in a Blanc de Blanc.
Not in Blanc de Blanc, but I'm saying like in champagne.
Yeah, or like there is other like I don't want to. Okay. We're going real soft. Let's go real soft on this.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So yeah. So basically, champagne is they have the wine that they've
champagne method.
Champagne method, traditional method.
I've really taken us off. So the
it's
traditional
okay.
method. Take it here, Adam.
So they age it in whatever the vessel is that they're aging in. They have still wine. Then they take that still wine and they put it into a bottle, and with that bottle, they add a dosage. They add a little bit of yeast and a little bit of sugars, the classic way. I mean, there's other ways, other methods, but you're usually thinking a little bit of sugar, a little bit of yeast, and they add it into the bottle of wine, and what that causes is a secondary fermentation.
Yes, and because they cap it,
correct.
The yeast eats the sugar and farts out CO2, and then there's nowhere for it to go.
Right.
And so then it's bubbly.
It's like when you have a fart inside of you.
Yeah.
Right? If you just hold it in, there's pressure.
Except it's not as good as sparkling wine.
And until you open it and let it out, you know. So champagne's a fart.
Champagne, cava, and French Accorta
yeah.
farts.
So what they do, though, is so when you have yeast and sugar, there's something called lees that's a byproduct. So this is the dead yeast.
Yeah, all the dead yeast that have, after they eat the sugar, and
yeah.
fart and die.
And so when you see
like
champagne.
Like all of us.
Yeah, basically. And then, so when you see champagne, it's usually neck down, right? It's
at an angle.
At an angle. And what they do is it's called riddling. And that's where they slightly jiggle, twist the bottles, and they're trying to get all of that lees to settle in the neck of the bottle. And then they release all that. They disgorge it is what it's referred to. Then they sometimes top off if they're really bad at disgorging or they've let too much out. And they'll
Of the wine out.
Correct. And they'll
not too much of the lees out.
Correct. You want to get rid of all the lees. You want to be crystal clear is what they're hoping for.
In traditional method.
Correct. And then they cap it again with a cork. Before, typically it was capped with a crown cap, with like a bottle cap. And then that is champagne. So it's this long
process. Or champagne
process.
Method.
Correct.
Because that's also, you know, for cava.
French Ricorda.
I mean, Michael Cruz's Ultramarine.
Correct. So it's a very long process. So when you look at those sparkling wines that are made in this method and you look at the price points, typically the reason why they're really expensive is this was a long process. This was, you know, you made still wine and then you bottled it and then you waited for it to carbonate in the bottle and then you disgorged. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yes. And that's, why it's so expensive and shit.
Yeah.
But also why it's so often very good. Very good stuff.
Okay, so yeah, so that's I think, you know, that's the dumbed down as simple
that's,
as
that's,
possible.
That's
as
traditional
I can put
method
it.
For dummies on natural disasters.
Correct. So anyone that wants to come at us about the more technical stuff, we know we're just trying to be real simple and easy. So the second method that we want to talk about
is Charmat method,
yes.
Also known as tank method.
Correct.
And this is how they make Prosecco.
Yeah, and multiple other things,
yeah, multiple
but
other
most
things.
Famously is made in Prosecco. I think there's Cremants in France that do tank method quite a bit.
Yeah.
But it's basically the same thing. So you have still wine that then you re-ferment or get going again.
But the difference is like, so they do like, they do it in these huge tanks. Like they're done in huge tanks. So they do... They ferment a huge tank of the base wine, and then they then take that wine out of that tank and put it into a new tank, and then dosage from there.
Yes.
And so add like the yeast and sugar, so that way instead of it sparkling in its individual bottles, it's actually sparkling all together in this huge tank.
I kind of think of it in my brain like a party. Like champagne is like this sophisticated party where nobody's touching and like nobody's dancing with each other and everyone's like in their own little individual bottles and their own little riddling things and they're like, oh, hello there, kind sir, and they're not really like interacting. And then tank method is like the party where they're all just like, you know, it's like a house party and they're all on top of each other and dancing and sweaty and I don't know.
I think of traditional method more as like an apartment complex.
Okay, yeah.
Like they're all in their compartmentalized
space
and they're like, leave me alone, be quiet, I'm on my own.
Jail cells.
Exactly, yes. Jail cells for yeast.
But in the tank method or Charmat,
it's a party.
Yeah, it's a big complex. It's just
everyone is in the swimming pool together.
Yeah, you're going to get polio.
Yeah, is that? I don't know if that's how people get polio.
Are
you thinking about Marco Polo?
No, I thought polio was public swimming pools. It was
maybe.
Like a big fear of polio.
Really?
I could be wrong.
I don't know.
I wasn't alive, and I don't know anybody
who's
ever gotten polio.
I'm like, I just used to be on swim team, but no one ever was like, oh, you might get polio. They're like, don't kick too hard on that butterfly, Ross. You might come out with polio.
Yeah, you might never kick again.
I guess definitely don't take our word on polio. We have no idea about that.
No, all you have to do is eat a sugar cube, and you're good.
Okay, wow, okay. I have no... No, I'm like absinthe? What?
Yeah, no, basically polio vaccine was sugar cube. Anyway.
Anyways, okay. So with this this tank method, you know, they don't riddle, they don't disgorge, you know, they're just taking it from, so they take that second tank, they filter it, and then they put it in bottle.
Right, and so that's a reason why these wines typically are a little less expensive.
Yes.
Because you're doing things mechanized, right? You're not using human hands, human effort, human touch. Now, champagne method can be mechanized. There are machines that do riddling. I'm sure there's machines that disgorge. I'm sure that exists.
Yeah.
But you're doing for each individual bottle where this is, you're doing everything at once. And
it's
then
more
you're
mass.
Bottling.
It's more mass production.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not necessarily saying like,
it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I will drink Charmat method wines, no problem. I probably would drink those, quite honestly, more often than I drink than I drink the traditional or Champenoise method because I don't spend that much money on wine that often. And now we're at...
But just to be clear, though, so with Prosecco, though, since Charmat and Tank Method, while it can be used for tons of different things, it is most closely associated with Prosecco, but there's another way to make Prosecco, which is called Col Fondo, and that's basically the traditional method that, you know, the same thing as, like, Champagne, Cava, and Franciacorta, but it's without disgorgement. So right. It's keeping... And when you don't disgorge, it keeps, you know, the wine... Like, basically all the lees are the... are still in the bottle, so it creates kind of this cloudiness. And
yeah,
so if you're interested in natural Prosecco, Col Fondo is what you want to be looking for.
Yeah, and there's another wine that's famously does that, which is the Puro by Movia.
Oh yeah,
which was a wine that would.
And Movia's from
Slovenia.
Yeah, Slovenia.
Or I think it's the Slovenian Friuli border. I don't know if they're in Italy or if they're in Slovenia.
They're in Slovenia.
But when you would order a six pack, it would come with a special tool that they made so that you could disgorge it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was. It's a whole.
It's messy. If you go on our Instagram, you'll see how messy. It gets.
Yeah, it's a. They recommend doing it in, which I would recommend too, but it's not great for the gram. Is you do it inside a tank of water.
Yeah, that's how I did it with Krista Scruggs.
Yeah, and that so sort of prevents the messiness.
The pumpkin jizz that you got all over your black pants.
All over.
Yeah, so that's Col Fondo. So it's basically, you know, traditional method without disgorgement, but just so you have an understanding of, like, the different
Again,
types
we're
of
going percentage. Very loose here, so anyone
very
who's, like,
loose.
Who's going to be like, well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a fun time for us to get to the topic of conversation, which is Pet Nat, which is next.
Pet Nat.
Well, I guess there is one other way that you can make sparkling wine is, like, some people just literally
force carbonate. Correct.
Which I just sort of think is lazy.
Well, it's like... forced carbonation
or soda.
It's like Budweiser or it's cheap beers forced carbonated.
To me, I'm just like, well, then why are you like? To me, with all forms of winemaking or any form of
it's like
art,
a soda stream.
Yeah, but I'm also like, why are you doing it? If you know, like for me, like I think we've talked about this before. I'm not sure. I think on the pod where you're like, I have to make wine. I physically have to make wine. It's something that's inside of me that I need to do. For me, that's writing. Like, it's something I physically have to do. I don't know why, but, like, I have to write. It's something I have to do. And so with forced carbonated wines, I'm sort of like, what's driving you to make the sparkling wine? Are you just making a sparkling wine just to have one? You know, because to me, that doesn't... It seems like it's like, such a... Like, it's a more shallow...
I think it's just a scientific approach. It's like a... It's
for
like
sure.
Maybe
I mean, I'm sure that there's some
approach.
Great ones.
Well, Abe Schoner does one called Blowout. And
I had it recently, and it was pretty damn good.
That is forced carbonated.
And I know.
That's him experimenting, I think, just with the science of it.
Yeah. I just personally think that the best sparkling wines that I've had, and maybe things will progress in the future, I don't like to speak in absolutes. Like, I would never be like,
The forced carbonated to me is...
I just find it... To me, personally, it's just like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, agreed.
I want to see a little bit more...
Effort.
Well, not effort.
Abe specifically. No, I'm joking.
Abe probably is going to listen to this movie.
Love you, Abe. Abe is different because he's not a mass produced giant corporation force carbonating.
Also, I tried Blowout with Abe recently and he knows I enjoyed it. So, but you know, I do, you know, Abe Schoner is a anomaly in many, many ways. So he doesn't really count. But for me, I just think in general, right now, I prefer other ways over it because I just want to see the intention of the winemaker. And generally, if you're just throwing carbonation in there, there doesn't seem to have a lot of like soul or intent behind that.
No, I get it.
But anyways, but now to the reason we are all here. So yeah, Petit Nat naturel.
Just means naturally sparkling in French. It's not anything crazy.
Yeah, and everyone calls it Pet Nat because it's easier.
Speaking French sucks. It's hard.
Yeah, don't I know it.
Yeah.
So the thing that makes Petit Naturel is different than the other wines that we've talked about or the other methods of making sparkling wine that we talked about aside from the adding of CO2. So with Petit Naturel, it's only one fermentation. Basically, they take the base wine that's fermenting, and halfway through that fermentation, they put it in bottle. They usually put a crown cap on it, and then they just pray to fucking God that it sparkles.
And that it keeps going.
Yeah, because if it doesn't keep going, then you end up with something called a flat nat or a pet not.
Correct. Which exists.
Which exists. Because, you know, it's a gamble. Like, there's no way for them to know. Once they seal that bottle, there's no way for them to know if it's actually going to bubble.
Right, until
bubble,
they open it.
Until they open it. So, I mean, there was an Olivier Lemesson Petulant Naturel a couple years back called Pal Plop Whiz, I remember.
Yeah, delicious wine.
It was
wine.
So fucking good. And then the next year, completely flat. And then I think he stopped making it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, that really sucks. Because that first vintage I had of it back, I think it was 2014, maybe 15. It was so incredible. And then the next year, I was like, when's that Pal Plop Whiz coming in? I want it. And then I was like, oh, they're all flat. And I was like, oof. Bummer.
So I think the you know, not to get too deep into it, but like the difficult part is you're trying to find this fine balance of how much residual sugar is still in the wine, how alive everything is still going, and sort of, you know, what exactly finding that sweet spot. So you're putting in you're putting it in and you're capping it and everything's
because
still
you're not
going.
You're not adding any. There's no added sugar or yeast, so they're just taking the base and putting it in bottle. There's no extra yeast or added sugar
to a
Petulant Naturel. There's nothing. So it's not like they're calculating things out while they're putting it in bottle. I'm saying that they're not calculating out like, oh, like does it need this much yeast, this much sugar?
Right, we can add this or do this or do that. There's some people who do it by taste, but there's, you know, you can get a refractometer and measure the RS and stuff. And then I think with pet nats though, what is that? Because you're doing that, there's byproduct like we were talking about, which is the lees, right? Because through fermentation, there's going to be lees, and so a lot of these pet nats they have a substantial amount of lees, and I've seen trends for both where people disgorge and then recap with a bottle cap so that they...
Michael Cruz does that with his Valdiguier, sparkling Valdiguier.
Le Capriade disgorges.
Capriade does that.
Sometimes they disgorge twice.
Which is crazy because those are two, I think, of the most reliable, incredible Petulant Naturels on the market. Like, honestly, if you ever want to try out a beautiful Petulant Naturel, or let's say you're going to a party where you're not sure if people are going to be accepting of something called Petulant Naturel and are like looking for something like champagne, or your parents or whoever the fuck, I don't know who these judgmental assholes are, but a bottle of Capriade, like,
no one has never not liked that wine.
No one has never not liked that
any
wine.
Of their wines,
and no one will ever know that it's a natural wine. It's not like, quote unquote, like my least favorite word, funky. It's not like it's a beautiful, well-made, consistent, since I mean, I wrote about my book. The first time I had it was like in 2013, and it's. I've never had a bad bottle of theirs. They're extremely.
They
consistent.
Also do these things called Zorks, which are incredible. Which are like this synthetic cork top that you open, and then it's a closure again.
Yes,
and you can reseal it.
So you don't even need to go find those.
So
those
buy the
caps.
Fucking Magnums. They're dope. They're
Dude,
great.
What's crazy,
they're amazing.
Dude, I had one of the Capriade. I had a 2013 Capriade. Just their normal one. I just said Method Ancestral on it, so I don't know. But
I
got
the white label.
The white label, yeah. I got it at Psychic Wines for $53. It was like the best $53 I've ever spent
Absolutely.
In my fucking life. Like, amazing.
We should just do an episode about how good they are. But they're so one of the things about Pascal, and I'm blanking on the other person's name.
At Capriade?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Is they also, they take their time with everything. So they don't treat Pet Nat or Petulant Naturel Method Ancestral, I think.
Yeah, they also call it Method Ancestral.
I think that's what they label it as. At La Capriade. But they take their time. They don't treat them like sort of these flash-in-the-pan wines, which is fine, but they like sit on stuff. They let it wait. Sometimes they release the 13 before they release the 12 or whatever. And they put it... But then there's this like other world, which is like,
so yeah, so that's the world of disgorgement.
Yes.
Like where they're disgorging, and so the wines are, you know, on the clearer side. They're not the cloudy, you know, the cloudy, quote unquote, weird.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to stop using weird and funky, but that's beside the point for now. You know, so they're more on the clear side, where they're almost look a little bit more, quote unquote, like traditional in terms of like traditional method, where it's more of like what you would expect as a consumer that isn't used to natural wines.
And then there's the wild, crazy world where you have tons of sediment The wines are cloudy and there's chunks flying around.
Dude, you get the bottom of the glass on accident. Like, there's been so many times where I'll, like, because, so you can't, for those of you that don't know this, I don't know how you wouldn't know this, but I have a little thing called the Ross test where you chug out of the bottle.
This is the first time we've mentioned it on the podcast.
I think so, yeah. Well, I'm mentioning it because you can't really Ross, most bottles of bubbles you can't Ross test. It's not a good look. It will come out your fucking nose. It's just not, it doesn't work. But you can, once there's, here's a quick tip for everyone that's trying to Ross test sparkling wines. You have to wait until there's less than half the bottle left in order to do
right,
it.
Right, then the gas doesn't go
so
up your nose.
So then the gas doesn't go up your nose and out, and it's embarrassing. Which I still do to this day because I'm an asshole. and I'm just like, I'm immortal.
Yeah.
Like, I never make mistakes. Anyways, but a lot of times, like, I'll be like, oh, I'll Ross. People will be like, Ross, that's the bottom of this, you know, the rest of this wine, Marissa. And I'm like, sure. And then it's just
sludge.
It's just sludge. Just straight gross fucking sludge in your mouth. And then you're just, you know, you either have to make the choice depending on, well, you want to get it off your mouth. You want to get it out of your mouth because it's disgusting. But
like, whether you spit it out immediately.
It's like
or
sandy mud. It's like, it's
silt.
It's silt. Yeah. It's, but like coarser than silt.
Yeah.
I've had too much experience with sediment, obviously.
And you can do, I mean, you can always disgorge at home. If you buy a bottle like that, you can always turn it upside down and
riddle
it
yourself.
You gotta
wait a while, yeah.
Which is a fun little thing, maybe. But
I don't think so, because you ruined your pants today.
That's true.
And I ruined my favorite pants. And the reason I don't have my favorite fucking shirt anymore that Adam made, not my favorite shirt that Adam's ever made, my favorite shirt of all fucking time was my Alice Firing Black Flag shirt, which got destroyed while I was disgorging with Chris's Scrubs.
Great photo, though.
Great photo, but I miss that shirt. Anyways, don't disgorge at home. Don't
so
do
those
it.
Wines, I think, they're cloudy and they definitely have flavors that are going to be a little. They've got. I'm going to say bready. I'm not saying bready. I'm saying bready.
As in yeasty, but no one likes saying. No one likes saying yeasty. But they're yeasty. Like they have like this like breadish quality. They do have a bit more texture. I feel like I find them to be a bit more.
Yeah, they're weighty.
Yeah, they're a little bit weightier, depending on how much, you know, cloud and sediment is in there. A lot of these wines are sold in clear bottles, so you can kind of see just from looking at them, like, what's kind of going on there.
And I will admit, like, as somebody who made a pet nat and originally wasn't going to disgorge, and now has decided I will disgorge, it came from just my own taste test with the wine, where I tasted it with the sludge, settled at the bottom.
You were like, can I sell this sludge at the farmer's
market? Or then
market?
I tasted it all incorporated, and then I tasted it disgorged. And I will say, flavor-wise, it was just prettier and lighter and just all around and a more enjoyable wine when it was disgorged. So I'm going to do it. But it's not to say that, you know, I think that every winemaker can make their own decision on what it is, and every consumer can make their own decision on buying it. And they're fun. I do love drinking. I mean, we're drinking a wine right now that's got it's young. This isn't a wine that's for release, and it's got a little bit of yeast in it,
well,
and
yeah,
it's delicious.
You, I mean, you just disgorged it, like, literally, like, less than an hour ago. But, I mean, and also, too, I think that it depends on, like, the winemaker and the variety and a lot of things in terms of, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily say that, like, an undisgorged or a disgorged Petzold Natural is, like, prettier to drink necessarily than a...
No, just the one I made, I found.
Yeah. That's
I'm
what
not
I'm saying.
Talking about all of them. I'm just saying the one I made, I found.
I think that, you know, like, and that's, I think that every winemaker probably has to, like, come to that decision of, like, what, you know, what works best for this wine. And, but again, like, that's what's so cool about natural wine because, you know, if you're, let's say you're trying to make, you know, a traditional method, you know, or not traditional method, but let's say you're trying to make a pet nat in champagne or something, you know, like if you want to be a part of like the AOC or whatever, you know, there's so many rules that you have to follow with these certain methods and stuff, you know, and like natural wine kind of gives people, I think, more of a, or winemakers more of a creative choice in terms of like how they want to express their wine.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like.
No, you're right. I mean, in some ways, I feel like Petiot Naturals have become, you're drinking sort of this history in some ways. Like, so on this topic, I'm just going to quickly, we don't need to go into detail, but I'm going to talk about just the concept of preservatives in wine. So sulfur, which is a big sort of debatable concept, or not concept, it's an actual physical thing. But use of it in the natural wine community, there's debates and there's just conversation that I don't want to get into. But what sulfur is a preservative. What CO2 is also a preservative. So when you have no oxygen or very low oxygen in a sparkling wine, they in theory can last longer, right? So you can have this. So if you have a little bit of Pétillant sparkling in your wine, and your use of sulfur, your use of preservative goes down because you don't need it. So you see a lot of wines, Pétillants with that are 00. That,
well, like this one we're drinking right now is 00, yeah.
With no sulfur additions. And so there is this idea that it's sort of, they are like, I don't know. I don't want to say like they're more honest because it's not, that's not a real thing, but they're just, there's sort of this truth, and it's like in some ways it is the most, it is this, just this natural wine, and sometimes shit fucking re-ferments in the bottle. Sometimes
that, yeah, that happens with, I mean, a lot because of still wines.
Yeah, and so I think that like if you bottle it, there are some people I've met and I've talked to who intentionally bottle with ever so slight sugar with the intention of the wine just carbonating just like such a hair.
Becoming like a frizzante.
And then they tell you to decant it and like let that all blow off because that'll go away after a while. It'll become flat again. Yeah. And then you drink that flat wine. So there is sort of, I don't know, there's many reasons.
Yeah, there's, and also too, like I think it's really interesting that people think that Pétillant Naturel is like some sort of, you know, trend. It's like along the same line as like skin contact or as some people call it orange wines.
I call them Mandarin wines.
Mandarin wines.
Tangelo wines.
Tangelo wines, yeah. You know, Pétillant Naturels are not like a new crazy thing. You know, it's not like the Vinous Ciders that we're talking about, which are like definitely like new and happening in a lot of ways. Pétillant Naturels have been around forever.
Yeah, like, it's a very
old form of winemaking. And honestly, it's because like they didn't, if you think about it, you know, old school, like old back in the day winemakers, they probably didn't, like, they didn't know it was going to sparkle. They were just like,
no, they didn't have refractometers where they were measuring their sugar. Like, they were tasting it and they were going, is this dry?
Okay. Oh,
yeah, it's dry. Let's
and then they're
it.
Like, well, shit, now it's sparkling. Like, yeah. You know, it's not, so it's not this thing.
We better drink all this shit before the corks pop out.
Yeah.
Celebratory wine. Oh, I never thought of that. I'm going to go with that. That's why sparkling wine is considered celebratory, because you got to drink it all fucking real quick or else all your corks are going
to
pop out.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, that's a good, I feel like that's like a comic strip waiting to happen.
It makes sense.
I mean, I don't know if it's true, but
no, I like it though.
But I like it. You know what? It's a part of the canon of our our podcast now.
This is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This
yeah,
is the
yeah, yeah.
Natural Disaster Podcast Universe.
And now that's why sparkling wines are celebratory, is because you had to drink them before all the pop.
Yeah, official canon.
Exactly, official canon. That's what it is. Until we're still in the Shonies. We're still in the Shonies. But here's something interesting. So Pétillant Naturel, you know, everyone that's into wine kind of gets it now. For example, I was in Paris with Danilo Marcucci, who does the Conocibile della Safa wines. We've talked about him a bunch on our podcast because I made the Vini Giovanni Frizzante with him, right? And we're having tea, which is very odd for me to be having tea. But we're having tea, and he starts talking about how he adds frozen, like, basically his Brioso, which is one of my favorite sparkling wines. He was telling me I had always assumed it was a Pétillant Naturel. I just never really questioned it. It was just like, yeah.
Right, it had the flavor profile, the characteristics.
It sold in my favorite shops. I never thought twice about it.
Crown capped,
yeah. So he starts talking about how he basically induces a second fermentation in bottle by adding frozen must from that year.
So for people who don't know what frozen must is, it's just basically grape juice that hasn't fermented.
Yeah, so the must is like all the grape skins and seeds and all the shit from like a red wine, basically, that it's also called like the cap if you're using, you know, like, you know, in tanks and stuff. But basically it's all the matter, like the grape matter besides the juice. So basically he freezes that.
And then I'm assuming presses.
And then he freezes it, and then he presses it, and then he adds it at bottling. So it's basically like a dosage.
Yeah, he's basically adding grape sugar.
Yeah, and I fucking lost my shit.
Punched him in the face.
No, I almost did. I was like fuming. I was like, what?
Well, because you had been representing it, I'm assuming, publicly.
I had never called it a Petulant Naturel, but I was like fucking fuming about it because in a way I was like, what the fuck? And he was like, I don't know why you're so mad about this. I was like, I feel mad because like this word is being used for things that aren't, like, that's not a Petulant Naturel. And he was like, I never said it was. I said it was a naturally sparkling wine. I use the must from the still wine to do it. Like, I don't understand what your fucking problem is. And I'm like, there are ethics, words mean things. And so then I'm like on this whole tirade. I'm like so fucking pissed about it. I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, this is not good. Like, the public needs to know about this. And so then I go and I talked to Michael Cruz and like a couple months later, and Michael Cruz is, you know, one of California's leading winemakers. He definitely doesn't associate, or he doesn't, you know, he's not necessarily a natural winemaker, but he's low intervention. He's a biochemist from, like, you know, Cal State Berkeley, or as he says, Cal, or I guess most people from Berkeley just call it Cal, which I didn't know. And Michael Cruz got mad at me. But anyways, I told him about this because I wanted Michael's opinion about this. And he was like, dude, doing that sort of dosage is so hard. Like, I cannot believe you got mad at this guy for doing that. Like if you're going to do anything to induce the second fermentation, that's probably one of the hardest, most complicated, difficult ways to do it. Like, the amount of, like, precision and patience you have to do that. And Michael was like, you probably owe him an apology. And I was like, oh. So I did end up apologizing to Danilo next time I saw him in Italy. But it's interesting because, you know, so there's that. There's people at, because then I found out that this is a, because Danilo was like, dude, a lot of people do this because if you're not doing it, it is, you're only guaranteed a couple good vintages every 10 years, you know? So this is a way for us to ensure that the wines actually sparkle. And now, as I've dug deeper into this, you know, now it's like, for example, when I was in Vermont, like at Fable, like they're using honey to induce the second fermentation. And when I made the Chile Ojotso Frizzante with Danilo, there was a Pied de Cuve that was added, that was made. But, and, you know, it's all from the same vineyard. It's all from the same place. But a lot of people consider that, like, inoculating, basically.
Yeah, I think also, like, you're kind of talking about sort of the bastardization of the word Petnat. Petnat doesn't just mean natural sparkling wine.
No.
It's a specific method, and I think that there's been this bastardization. And I'm not saying that people are perpetuating that intentionally, but it's sort of like...
I don't think it's intentional. I think it's that people are, myself included...
But we
assume, like, I mean, not anymore, but, like, there was a time when I assumed that, like, all, you know, unless I was told otherwise, it was Petulant Naturel.
Or people just go into a wine shop or something and they go, oh, I'm looking for a Petnat, and they might not necessarily actually be looking for a single fermentation wine that's bottled during fermentation. They're looking for a natural wine that is also sparkling. You can have a traditional method natural wine.
Totally.
Maybe some people would disagree.
I mean, I think it's hard. I think there's actually a lot of debate on that. But that debate goes back to the dosaging with
grape must.
With grape must.
Right.
And so
from the same vineyard, some from the same vintage.
And some people say that then that means it's not a quote unquote naturally sparkling wine because you are inducing the sparkle. For me, I personally think as long as you are using grape must from that vintage or like a Pied de Cuve from that, you know, like...
Or like fucking honey, like you said, like honey from your hive that's like helps pollinate the grapes.
Because that's like, to me, it's like all a part of the vineyard and the terroir. And like, but I mean, it's terrifying to me to think about like someone that has like, they're like, ooh, my best grape must is from 1997. And like, that's what I add every year. You know, that to me would be weird. You know, like if someone had like just like
my freezer is full of grape must from 1997.
Exactly, just a storage locker full of like must from
cloning
97.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting synthetic grape must from their biochemist friend, not Michael Cruz.
Not Michael Cruz.
Who's like synthetically making.
Michael Cruz is like, don't kill my future business. Like,
no, we love Michael. We love you, Michael Cruz.
Yeah, don't start doing biochemistry for
I mean, let's be honest, like winemaking, there is, I mean, it is chemistry, right? Like
it is too. But I mean, and it's just like,
there's so many people listening to this. Maybe not so many, but there's people listening to this right now who are hate listening, and they're like, we define natural. What does natural mean then? You're saying chemistry. You're saying blah, 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 blah. I just want them to.
The point is that I think that for me personally, I think that I think that the word petalant naturel, the definition of petalant naturel needs to be contained and preserved to what it actually means. And petalant naturel, again, means just one fermentation. It's one fermentation.
I mean, we could call it single fermentation sparkling wine. Right, because that's like a
that's a petalant naturel.
That's what it means exactly.
Well, but that's why we have to preserve that, and that these other things are not petalant naturels.
Right,
and like I think that we maybe if naturally sparkling wine isn't what works for every. I mean, Italians are kind of lucky because they can just put Frizzante on there, and everyone's like, "All right, it's sparkling."
I'm sure, and then somebody can correct us, but I'm sure there's a French term somewhere for adding that's grape like must.
Yeah,
like method. Blah, blah, blah.
But no one's really talking about it. And so now it's become this weird thing, too, where, you know, I forget the name of this. She's a lovely, lovely champagne producer. She was at Brumaire this year.
Yeah.
She was like, well, we inoculate. And I was like, whoa, inoculate. Because inoculation is such a dirty word in the natural wine world because it's generally associated with, like, adding, you know, lab-cultured yeast.
Correct.
And you don't really think about it as like, oh, inoculation is also like adding your own.
You can culture your own yeast too.
Yeah.
In your from your like when I say like you can get grape must and you can have that as your beer.
I kind of don't. I'm not into that vibe, but I mean, but I don't know how it's any different than this. But I you know, for me,
how does she make champagne then?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, you have to.
Right, and then I mean, if you're culturing yeast from your own vineyard, at least there's consistency and it's
terroir.
Yeah, and it's the naturally occurring yeast in the vineyard. I don't think natural wine doesn't mean that you can't use a cotton swab. I think that natural wine means that you're using the things that are naturally existing in the world, and you're not using things that you went into and like manipulated. I think manipulation. God, now no. See the
it's a rabbit hole, and it's also just like time is a flat circle. We will always come back to this conversation. Like we will never escape this conversation.
That's true.
About natural wine. But I mean, for me, sticking on topic of like sparkling wines, you know, I'm not against. I'm like when Danilo after like I talked to Danilo about it, I talked to Michael Cruz about it, and like I was like, all right, you know what. I understand this. Like, this is someone that wants to sell his wine to people that cares a lot about the product he makes. Like, I know how much care he puts into it. And, you know, it's not him taking something that's foreign from his environment or foreign to his winemaking process and adding it to create a product. He's taking something that is already a part of the process. You know, like, the must was already a part of the process of making the base wine.
It's kind of like when you're rendering bacon and you pull the fat aside and then you use them to cook the eggs or the hash browns.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not like
I don't cook, but yes.
You know what I mean though. Like
I watch other people cook, so I totally get it.
You're using the byproduct of the bacon.
And I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
So but I mean some people do, I think. But
vegans.
Vegans have a lot of problem with bacon. I don't know how much problem they have with frozen must. But you know, I think that there does need to be I don't know what the word should be. I think that the term naturally sparkling wine is really going to become problematic if that's the way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sure there's a term. And if for anyone who knows the term.
I know in Italy they just kind of say like Frizzante or sparkle. You know, it's like. So I don't know what it is, but I do think that there is a real need to preserve.
I want to say it's called Method Alsatian, but I think I'm wrong.
That sounds like something from Alsace.
I know. I think I'm wrong.
I have no idea.
Is also
you know way more about that shit than I do.
I think I'm wrong, but I know that there's a name for that method.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess the point is that petalant naturels are really, really special, and there's something that winemakers, you know, it's a huge risk for winemakers to make them, especially when we were talking about natural winemakers that are working on such a small scale. You know that. You know, sometimes a vintage can make or break them.
No, absolutely.
And so petalant naturel as a term. Pet Nat, like that is something that needs to be respected because it should be respected as a process. And as soon as it starts getting used for any sparkling wine that's like kind of natural, you're actually devaluing the method in which it's made and the risk that these winemakers are putting themselves and their, you know, oftentimes their family and their land and everything they, you know, everything through.
Well, when I made my Pet Nat, I had a
like, I lost everything.
I had dinner with a bunch of winemakers a couple months later, and we were just talking about, and they were talking about the risks of making Pet Nats and sort of stuff, and they all started telling stories about sort of times where they'd failed and where their wines didn't sparkle and how they dealt with it individually. And some of them were like, I just released it, crown capped and all. Some people said that they opened up all the wines and they used them and incorporated them into other wines. Some people said that they opened all the wines and then they racked them and rebarreled them and then let them age longer as still wine. So like everybody sort of had their method of how they dealt with their problems.
That kind of, you know what? I will say this though. It fucking pisses me off when I can tell that a winemaker released a wine being like, it was supposed to be a Pet Nat, but now it's still, have fun. It's like, I think
it's only acceptable if the wine is delicious. Cause then they're like, okay, I can release this. It's still delicious.
But oftentimes they don't know that.
Well, if they can open it,
they can like open it. But I mean, like, still, but like, two of them might have been sparkling for them. I don't know. Like,
I know what you're. All right, you're talking about more that when they sell it and they're like,
I don't know,
it's kind of shitty.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Like, but if someone drinks it this way, they'll think it's a still, and if they drink it this way, they'll think it's a sparkling.
It's got to be good still.
It's got to be good still. Like, and I won't name the producer, but this year I bought 3 bottles of this goddamn wine because
they were
everyone,
all still,
and everyone fucking promised, like every single time I bought it, it was like, no, it's sparkling. You must have had a bad closure. You must have had a bad closure. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. This wine, like, is there's,
you're like, just take it and shake it, it for an hour.
But I'm also like,
drink it warm.
I'm just like, don't sell it as a fucking sparkling wine then.
Yeah, totally.
I'm sorry. If I had 3 bottles of it that were all fucking flat, it's not a fucking sparkling wine. And that's fine. But like, don't fucking put it in the fucking sparkling wine section.
Yeah.
Like, don't lead me on because, and don't like sell it to me as a sparkling wine. Like, don't get my hopes up because then that does ruin the taste of the base wine that maybe I would have liked otherwise because you're putting the expectation of sparkling wine. And then I'm like, wait, now it's flat, but now I feel bamboozled and now I have anger.
Yeah.
And obviously it's still.
And then Marissa doesn't need more anger.
No, no. I mean, actually, I don't. I think people think I hold on to anger, but
no,
I don't.
Right?
It's just that I have like this. It's like a well. The well is inside of me. The well is beside me, and I can just pull whatever I need from it. You know, just all the
How
memories.
How deep is the well?
Oh, it's very deep. I'm only 5'4", but the well is at least 20 feet. Like, I got lots of.
Like, little Timmy falls in the well. We're not getting him out.
No, fuck no. Did you not? I read you the email that I got this morning.
Yeah.
I will forget about that email until one day.
Yeah.
I need to pull up that email and be like, oh, remember that. But yeah, I mean, again, just a kind of, I guess, sign off on
explore,
this.
Drink, and
yeah,
enjoy
and
the Pet Nats.
Enjoy, explore the Pet Nats. Also, enjoy, explore all of the other kinds of sparkling wines that are out there. Don't assume that something just because it has a crown cap and is sold at a natural wine shop is necessarily a Petillant Naturel, but also that doesn't make it bad.
And on that note, don't assume just because you're at the grocery store and you see something with a crown cap that it means it's natural.
No, I mean, do people do that?
I'm sure if it hasn't happened, it's gonna.
I mean, it's gonna. I mean, it's all happening so quickly.
Yeah. Anyway.
On that note, well.
Welcome to our dystopian future.
Yeah, where we're all little yeast babies that fart and then die.
And then we're lees.
And then we get exploded out of a bottle. But then maybe we get exploded out of a bottle and then we're born again. Maybe that's what it is.
Have you watched, are we saying goodbye?
I thought we were, but go ahead.
Have you watched Forever yet on Amazon Prime?
No, it sounds terrifying already.
It's so good. Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen.
Oh,
directed
by
Alan Yang.
Oh my God. Okay, so I just saw the billboard for it today while driving to therapy.
So good.
Okay, I'll check
it
out.
I watched it.
Is it a bummer or is it happy?
Both.
Ugh, I hate bummers.
I watched it without, like...
My entire life has been a 20-foot well of awfulness. I don't like... People love to, like, vacation in drama and sadness, and I'm like, no, Get me away
from
like,
it. You're like fucking tourists.
I know. I'm like, go and like live a broken marriage. Like, come on. Like, get with it. Anyway,
yeah, let's sign off.
Good
there.
Thing I went to therapy before this podcast. All right.
I recommend Forever to anybody who hasn't watched
it. I'm going
to
check it out. Because
don't
I've
read anything about it. Just watch it.
I'm going to
watch
it.
There's one episode that is one of the greatest episodes of television.
You know
I've
what
ever
you should
seen?
Also just watch is Rick and Morty. Because it's the best, and I got to see them sort of at the Emmys, and yeah. It was great. It was good stuff. All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye, you guys. See you next time. Oh, wait.
I didn't stop it.
Please, if you like us, please go just like rate us and like put it
there.
Oh,
yeah. Back to the beginning.
Back to the beginning, please. Because I really, really, really genuinely love like all the messages we get and you guys telling us in person. But the loudest people are usually the meanest. And so there's a lot of mean people. And so if you like what we're doing, your voice actually it means a lot to
us. Yeah, it
so.
Does. And again, it's just really mostly just about, it makes us feel good.
And it helps us. But yeah, it helps us in all the ways. Anyways, love you. Goodbye.
All right. Bye.